Hello and welcome to the Apache Cassandra Corner, a community-driven podcast for all things Apache Cassandra. The Apache Cassandra Corner is sponsored by DataStax. I am your host, Aaron Pletz. Well, hello everyone. Today, I'm sitting down with Chung Wong and Jordan West of Netflix. And we're here actually live at ApacheCon 2022 in New Orleans. Although I shouldn't have said live, it won't be live by the time everyone hears it at home. But Chung, Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I'm really just glad you guys, you know, were able to take some time and sit down with me on this. This is. And seriously, in the Cassandra world, Netflix is kind of legendary. So, any chance we get to talk to some of you folks, we're super excited about that.
Yeah,
so
excited.
For sure.
Yeah, very excited to be here. Nice to be back at an in-person ApacheCon. See everyone and see the Cassandra community. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's my first time here, but I'm very excited to meet all the people here.
I know, it's technically my first one in person, too.
Oh, really?
Every time they ask, hey, who's first ApacheCon is this? And I was like... But of course, I always forget that Patrick and I did a virtual Birds of a Feather at last ApacheCon, but I totally forget it because it was not in person.
Yeah.
Didn't register. Yeah. And it took me a while to go, oh yeah, that's right, I have been to one, but anyway.
Yeah, it's totally different.
The pandemic just totally messed with everyone's heads.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's great to see people in person again, really.
Yeah. Absolutely. So hey, why don't you guys start by just, you know, telling us a little about yourselves?
So like you mentioned, we work at Netflix.
Yep.
I personally have been there almost 2 years now. Been in the Cassandra community for about seven. The last five consecutively, a little break to go do some big data stuff off on the side. Remembering my love for low latency online databases. I spend most of my day working on Cassandra at Netflix, both operating and developing it. And it's really important to our business and to our customers.
Sure.
All right. Hi, my name is Chung. So I've been working with Netflix for about 6 months since April this year. So the back partition work is kind of my first project, onboarding project with Jordan. I'm very excited about the work. And before I joined Netflix, I was in Microsoft about 5 years working.
Okay.
Also working on the traditional the relational SQL database, Server, Azure SQL database. So it's I'm very excited to do a little bit shift from a traditional SQL to Cassandra, NoSQL database. And I truly love it about it.
Oh, that's great. I was gonna ask because you're a pretty new Cassandra user.
Yeah, I'm pretty new, yeah.
And you're just digging right into it. And seriously, I'm sure Jordan could tell you, Cassandra has this reputation as not being easy to use, as you have to keep this highly paid DBA ninja on staff just to make Cassandra work, I think that's great that you're really finding it welcoming on the technology side as well.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, not bad. I found it's pretty the other way. I found it's pretty easy to use. Mm-hmm. just in my opinion, because it's a good community support. That's the most important thing. Whenever I got some questions, I can always Google it up. I do search on even YouTube videos, tutorials, Slack Overflow channels. A lot of things I can ask. So, and also we have the dev and the user on the mailing list. So yeah, it helps a lot.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, hey, that's awesome. Awesome. So now you both gave a talk yesterday on handling bad partitions. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And I know that there's a lot of coaching that goes into helping the app teams avoid bad partitions. But ultimately they happen. Tell us a little about that.
To your point, we're really fortunate that we have a group at Netflix who partners directly with application teams and helps them model their data. And for reasons always unforeseen, bad partitions sneak in. And they really do have material business impact for us. So we have a level of incident called the core incident, which means our paying customers are having an impact on the application.
Right.
And it is not uncommon for if a core incident is happening and Cassandra's involved, for it to be bad partition related.
Sure.
So it really does have material business impact for us. Ideally, Cassandra would offer unlimited size partitions, like the data model sort of seems to promise. But until then, we needed better tools, because what we found was we were too slow at finding which partitions were the problem. And then once we found them, we would actually have to go through that team I was mentioning to partner with the application team to kind of build their own mitigation into the application.
Right.
And when you're in an incident, that's just not feasible.
Right.
And is it might be helpful to really talk, like, classify what we're talking about with bad partitions. The classic one is just partitions that are too large, like in the tens to hundreds of gigabytes in size. But the ones that we tend to deal with more are partitions that are maybe megabytes, maybe into the gigabytes, but they have millions and millions of rows, maybe 10 million, 20 million rows, or deletes, so they're all tombstones, so 20 million tombstones or something like that. And then the other one we get is when there's a lot of like write activity to one partition that's getting bad, and the data is spread over a lot of SS tables and compaction hasn't caught up. So when you have a really read latency sensitive cluster, that SS tables per read number is like critical.
So that's
kind of the shape of the problem that impacts us a lot, and it's hard because the application drives it, right? And we need tools as operators to identify, block, mitigate, and then ideally in the future, like, never have this problem, but until then.
No, for sure. So I've noticed too that in your talk yesterday, you used a couple of different node tool commands that I wasn't terribly familiar with. So these must be ones that you've added to node tool?
Yeah.
Added
or extended.
Added or extended, right. Could you tell us a little about those? I thought those were pretty cool. How precise they were and
And so what we looked at is the tools we had already and like where they could be better. So the two I worked on were just a really small extension to get SS tables. Get SS tables is a function that, given key space, table and key, tells you where the data lives on disk. And what we'd find is, like, we'd do some bash foo to pipe that just to figure out what levels those SS table were in. So we just did a little change to, like, output the level with the table when you're using level compaction, which is the majority of our store. And then the other one was top partitions. So top partitions in, like, that exist today, it's a little bit limited. It shows you, like, which keys are most read or most written to. But they may not be the keys that are problematic. You know, there could be another bad partition developing, but it's not the one that's causing the problem. And what we had before was just a report that was built off compaction, and compaction would see a large partition. But again, we didn't have a signal that partition was being read. So what we did was extend top partitions to count top partitions by row count, tombstone count, SS table count, and latency. And so that way we can output all those at once. So you run top partitions over a time frame, and you can say, like, in this, you know, 10-second window, this was actually the largest partition read, and that helps us mitigate more quickly. Once we mitigate, we backported something I'll let Chung talk about, which is the block list, and we sort of figured out, you know, once we know what the partition, what do we do with that? And that's where
Like, once we know which partition we know we want to, like, block, we just backport the block list or the net list, so that we can add this kind of this list of keys here, and then all the read and write to this, like, block list gonna be, like, denied, so it's like return error, something like that. This is kind of like blocking, and then once we block that, we need to find a way to, you know, mitigate the issue. So, like, to mitigate, with one tool we use, like, NT with, like, node tool force compact. This is something like we newly developed. This is kind of like my first, like, the project here, like Netflix. The background is, like, we used to use, like, the sets of GC grid seconds to, like, to 1 hour or something. And also then you use the node tool compact to compact the whole table. The problem is, like, the one is, like, the NT, the node tool compact, is scans the whole table, which is, like, very slow. It takes, like, hours or even, like, a day or two to finish a job. So it's like makes our the whole, you know, the mitigation is, like, it's too slow, way too slow. And another thing, another issue is, like, we set the GC to, like, 1 hour, so we run the arrays, right? So that's the data we make some arrays of, like, something called zombie data. So yeah, that's a, like, some give us, like, a background, say, hey, we wish we have a tool we can only like compact this problematic keys instead of the whole table. And also we do some like force compact that we ignore the GC grids so that we don't have to set the GC grids to one. So we don't impact the GC grids for other keys, only
right.
for the least right. of the keys we want to deny. So this is kind of like a background.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna ask. You know, I thought of too of like how when you have to set GC gray seconds on a table.
Yeah.
On some of those larger clusters, and I know that I've seen this before too. Have you ever had issues where you'll do that, but then get like a schema disagreement? Like maybe I see Jordan wincing.
We'll talk about Chang's second body of work. So no joke. That probably two of the most pervasive incidents for us that are painful are bad partitions and schema issues.
And schema issues,
so
right.
We are looking very much forward to transactional metadata.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, Chang had also done a patch to sort of generate deterministic IDs for tables to avoid that issue.
Yeah.
So yes, we have seen that, and we try very hard to avoid it. We have a lot of special tooling around it.
Yeah.
We actually do not let customers make schema changes directly through CQL.
Yeah. Excellent choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
The problem is like sometimes once we reach into the state of the schematic agreement, it's pretty hard to like mitigate that, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Sometimes you have to like drop the table, or sometimes you have to lose some data.
Mm.
So yeah, there's like no easy way. Always cannot the issue cannot be gone automatically. So yeah, that's like background. We use like deterministic ID instead of right now the Cassandra use like UUID, the time-based UUID for the table ID. So like when we create table and drop and recreate, the table ID gonna be the two different ones.
Okay.
Yeah. So like then we use the random UUID, we just like use the deterministic ID, which is composed by the whole the DDL statement, like create table statement for the whole thing. And if we create like two tables on the two different nodes, like say if the two create table statements in the two different nodes, like uncoordinated nodes, it's gonna be the same ID. So it won't be like in the reach to a state
right.
of schema discipline.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's awesome. You know, and I love the fact that that you're both kind of continuing that trend of, you know, how Netflix uses things and operates at such a large scale that, you know, the things that you do, and I don't know if you realize this or not, but the things you do, you know, the tools you create in the ecosystem make their way down to the rest of us, and we're like, oh my God, this is so cool, and it all comes from you know, folks like yourselves who have to deal with these things at such large scale that's...
And that's the beauty of open source,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
We benefit. I mean, even Netflix benefits from the other work in the community also. You know, people finding bugs, the new features that are coming out we're
right.
super excited
right.
about. And that's really one of the reasons we still, you know, work in that open source model at Netflix. You know, it's a huge sort of win for the company and the team to have other people running the database with us.
Right, right.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my first experience with like, you know, some of Netflix's Cassandra tooling was I was at Grainger on their first Cassandra team, their first cluster back in 2012.
Oh wow.
We were running, you know, 0.8 Cassandra 0.8 in prod.
Wow. 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This is before, you know, CQL hadn't even come out yet. CQL was like a Cassandra 1.1 thing.
Yeah.
So the only protocol we had was Thrift.
Yeah.
The only driver we had that would work with Thrift was Hector. Netflix came along with a Steinex.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, this is so awesome. So we started using the Steinex, and you know what was kind of funny is that you know, some of the other dev teams looked at our Git repos and were like, hey, where does this import from Netflix? I'm like, I know, we get to use Netflix. we're pretty seriously cool. But no, it's so great to you know, like I said, to see Netflix continuing that tradition of, you know, rolling things back out to everyone in open source.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a perk of working there, and again, I think it's great for the community, and it's awesome to hear stories like that and see the client be used. And
right.
I think now
right.
we're trying to figure out how we can contribute to the core client and those sorts of things. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Are there any other you know interesting tools that Netflix is kind of working on? You know, I know that the Netflix Data Explorer came out, and that was, again, that's another thing that was such a huge help for everyone. You know, one thing that I always heard from, you know, kind of like my internal customers back, you know, another job ago for me was, hey, how come there's no GUI client for CQL? And how come I have to use CQL Shell? So, yeah. I mean, the Netflix Data Explorer really was a big help to a lot of people as well.
Yeah.
It's used very heavily internally. It is open source, like you mentioned.
Yep.
One other thing that we open sourced recently, it's under the Netflix-Skunkworks GitHub, is our capacity planner. So this is tool that we actually use to give in like throughput, latency requirements, et cetera, pick what Amazon EC2 instances to deploy for that cluster and how big and how many regions, et cetera. So that can be used directly or just to get an idea of the type of decisions that we make. But that, like, whenever we create a cluster in Cassandra, that code is run to decide how that cluster is going to be sized, et cetera.
Sure.
Some of the work that we did for the talk is open sourced. So Chung's patch has 2+1s. I just need to get on merging it.
Oh, nice.
And then we found a bug in top partitions along the way. That's been open sourced. And then the other top partitions and get SS table changes are just on my list in my pipeline to get out there. So all of that, our goal is to open source. And then we're hoping, so Netflix has historically run a sidecar called Priam next to Cassandra. You know, we're really excited by the sort of unification of the sidecars in open source. And
For sure.
We're in the process of going to 4.0, and so we're going to get 4.0 working with Priam, but the plan is to then start to migrate a lot of the logic in Priam along while we work with the community to get that in the open source sidecar instead.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Yeah, I'll look forward to that. That's awesome. So, you know, one thing that I've found that I really didn't expect to see, but it's like, you know, when I came here, again, you know, we're seeing a lot of people in person. You know, we're getting a lot of folks in our talk track. There's a lot of new people here, a lot of people who are new to Cassandra. And, you know, it's something we haven't seen in a while because the community kind of like, you know, we kind of got an, you know, a bit of a funk.
Stasis.
Right. I think it had a lot to do with, you know, we were on version 3 forever, and then we were on code freeze for like a year.
Yeah.
And then we finally got, you know, 4.0 out the door.
I
think that was just such a huge boost, you know.
Yeah. 4.0 breathe the whole, like, I think, like, fresh new life into the database and the community. I'm really excited for the foundation it built. I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, how Chung dove right in. It's actually pretty awesome that most of the Cassandra folks at Netflix are new, like, Cassandra was new to them when they joined.
Okay.
We have expertise.
Oh, sure.
Some of them are working in different areas today right now. Mm-hmm. But most of the folks I work with day-to-day on our team, They work with other databases potentially, but not with Cassandra.
Okay.
So I love all the initiatives about making it easier to approach. I don't know how you found it for the first time. You know, I think there's there's little things you have to learn. You can probably attest to.
But I'm very excited. Like as I said, I feel like it's a very like active community. It's not just about like Cassandra, the database. Like the code is mainly about the people, like all the people I work with, all the developers, open source, like communities, so like all the team members. So I feel this is makes me the most excited about the Cassandra. It's all about people.
And that's a great sentiment, you know, and that's exactly, you know, the way I feel too, where it's like, there's so many new people here. Yeah. It really just gives you that.
Yeah.
Second level of like a second wind, almost like
it's awesome. And I think, you know, again, getting to be here, like, just really motivating. I had a coworker who said to me last night, you know, like, I was kind of interested in contributing to open source, I didn't totally get it, and now that I'm here, like, it clicked. We're gonna work on getting a patch out, and it's awesome.
Yeah, this is kind of like my career goals, like become one of the committers, like a Cassandra committer someday.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm very excited about that because like it's the impact, right? And also the people who I work with. So makes sense.
For sure.
And to that impact point, I think what's cool and to what you were saying is, you know, you get to see when you're here all the different places that Cassandra's running.
Right.
You're just like, wow.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I use a lot of those things, and so that impact is like broader than just your work, right? And you get to be a part of that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
awesome.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. All right, well, hey, Chung, Jordan, thank you guys so much for, you know, taking some time out of, you know, your time at the conference to sit down with me and, you know, kind of talk to the folks at home about everything that's going on with, well, not just ApacheCon, but also Netflix and, you know, some of the cool things you guys are doing. So seriously, just thank you, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for having
yeah,
us.
Thank you. Yeah.
To the folks at home, hopefully we see you next year.
Yeah, see you next year.
All right, hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's all for today. Thank you for listening to the Apache Cassandra Corner. Apache Cassandra is a registered trademark of the Apache Software Foundation. Thank you, and have a great day.